You know, I'm running for the United States Senate. Tomorrow is a very, very important time. This election is critical to this nation. For whatever reason, God has put me in this election at this time, and all the nation is watching. All Washington is watching to see what the people of Alabama do tomorrow.
Hey everybody, it's Friday, September 29th, 2017. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. I am Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week I talk to our Capitol muckraker-in-chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. On today's show, shock doctrine warriors take aim at Puerto Rico in the wake of Hurricane Maria. Roy Moore defeats Trump-endorsed Luther Strange in the Alabama state primary. You can't make that up. It's like freaking comic books. I swear to God. Steve Bannon and Nigel Farage were very, very happy they were actually at Moore's campaign event the night before the election. A preview of Pennsylvania state primary, perhaps? Perhaps. Climate scientists report that century-old temperature records for September have been shattered across the Midwest and East Coast during this month's heat wave. Judge rules that anonymous police officer can't sue Black Lives Matter. It's a social movement, you idiots. You know, First Amendment and all that. NFL players take a knee following Trumpster's attacks. ADAPT activists arrested and dragged away in protest against Graham Cassidy. Graham Cassidy is dead for now. Russian hacker story finally starts to get interesting. Kutztown University faculty union raises more than $4,500 for the adjunct who was kicked to the curb as part of the university's caring community initiatives. Wagner praises Bannon at Phyllis Schlafly Put America First rally in St. Louis. Scott Wagner looking to repeat Roy Moore's Alabama victory by throwing in with Steve Bannon why Paul Mango lines up with PA's Trump machine. State Senator Mike Regan takes his helmet off for the national anthem, uses Jackie Robinson to support his move to condemn the NFL for being anti-American. Jackie Robinson didn't stand for the national anthem, I'm just saying. Oh, incidentally, Mike Regan's junk premiered on Twitter, and then it went limp. Just saying. Oh, yeah. Still no budget. We told you so. SpaceX to produce Big Effing Rocket. That's actually the code name, BFR. In plans to make life interplanetary. Elon Musk was in Australia to announce the plans. Mars, the moon, and anywhere on Earth in less than an hour. That's right. New York to Shanghai, for example, in 39 minutes at a speed of about 18,000 miles an hour? How about that? Usually takes about 15 hours. Dyson, the vacuum cleaner people, Dyson to jump into the electric car market by 2020. Here those cars are going to suck. Badoom. Sunnyside up, back on at Pizza Boy. And Free Will is ramping up can productions. They've got CRISPR in cans, a Kolsch-style ale, just in time for Rocktoberfest. We'll talk about that. And rumor has it that Safe Word will be brewed again for the holidays. Oh, man, I tell you, I wanted to remind everybody, tune into the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. I'll be there once again, back on the stick. Back on it! Given the weekly resistance report, you can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also tune in on Dish Network, DirecTV, and on the Roku Free Speech TV app. If you go and you miss the show, hey, no problem. Just go to thericksmithshow.com and click on the Free Speech icon in the sidebar. There's also an interview with Amanda Morris, who is the president of Kutztown University's ABSCUF this week, talking about the adjunct who was basically kicked to the curb ahead of life-saving surgery. So you might want to check that out, too. So reminder, we need you folks to help keep Pull No Punches progressive media going strong. Become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to the RagingChickenPress.org and look for the support and membership tab. Click become a member and you're on your way. Not ready to become a member? No problem. You can make a one-time donation by clicking donate. And we're still running our back-to-school special, but TikTok, time is running. If you join now through October, the end of October, at the $10 a month level, we will send you a copy of Mark Bray's book, Antifa, the Anti-Fascist Handbook. If you don't want that, no problem. We'll send you a Raging Chicken Stay Woke coffee mug instead. But either way, we need you to become a member today. And I'll tell you, I sent this out to our staff. We just recently had to upgrade our server space. We've been working with Flywheel, as we've talked a little bit about before, and they have been absolutely fantastic. We've basically been exceeding our limits on a fairly regular basis now. So we had to upgrade our server space, and it's gonna be a little bit of a financial hit. So now is the time, folks. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press today at any level. But if you come in at the $10 a month level, that's where we really start seeing the impact. And, you know, you helped us get us to our first goal. We are, like, literally, like, almost two members away from hitting our first goal, at which we'll be able to pay our members more. And probably next week we're going to have a couple announcements that we're bringing on yet another student fellow. All right, so it'll be our second student fellow at Raging Chicken and a brand new writer. So, you know, and that's all thanks to you, those folks of you out there who become members of Raging Chicken Press. That's what allows us to pay our members. That's what allows us to do the work that we do. So, Sean, man, welcome back, man.
Yeah, how's it going?
Well, you know, it's been, once again, kind of, you know, a topsy-turvy, upside-down week. It's been pretty nuts, man.
It seems like each week is outdoing the one before. Yeah. I mean, especially now, like, with, you know, with stuff we're going to be talking about later on in the show, but, like, it's still 2017, and The campaign for governor in Pennsylvania, the primary, has gone off the rails. It's not even 2018, still like three calendar months away.
Well, I tell you, like, you know, like I've said before, if we have got to be subjected to this insanity, like, at the very least, you know, I want to be able to enjoy the show.
You know? Yeah.
And it looks like it's going to happen.
I mean, I felt like the Pennsylvania Senate race would be the first one to, like, go off the rails with Barletta, Saccone, and all that playing. We're around the sandbox, but Scott Wagner has just driven this thing off the friggin' like course, and it's not even like 2018. 2018 is still 3 months away, and we're still, yeah, it's just getting nuts.
Well, it is. I mean, it's pretty crazy. And so let's talk a little bit about kind of like some of the backdrop here with, you know, we can see echoes of this. It would just happen down in Alabama. I mean, there was the big Senate primary down in Alabama. Alabama, of course, is a solid red state. So if you win the Republican nomination there for for the Senate, you're not all but guaranteed, but you're like in like the strongest possible poll position to win that seat.
Yeah, and it's amazing to see the person who they elected.
Yeah, he seems like, you know, seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, I mean,
seems to care a lot about Alabama.
He does. Which part of Alabama? The 1950s Alabama?
The part that God loves, Sean. The part that God loves. By the way, did you know God was white? I'm just saying.
Blonde hair, blue eyes.
Yeah, right. No, very light skin. Yeah, this guy is, you know, it's interesting. The national media played it up, right? Because, of course, Steve Bannon was down there campaigning hard for this guy. This guy was a Supreme Court justice that was kind of basically kicked off the bench twice, right, for violating directives. Like, basically wanted to, you know, display his Ten Commandments in the, you know, in the courtroom. Thought that God's law basically, you know, was, you know, trumped, no pun intended, the law of the land. And is, you know, basically cut from the Bannon cloth.
Yeah, I don't know, like, what's crazier, prospects, this guy becoming United States Senator or Kid Rock becoming a United States Senator. But here we are in 2017, and that's the norm now.
It is the norm. And I think, you know, we talked a little bit about this before the show, and I think that we're seeing the playbook for how Bannon is going to be supporting and coaching candidates moving forward for the 2018 election series or season. And I think that, you know, it's funny watching some of the stories that, you know, after Moore won this, and, you know, Trump, of course, was down there campaigning for
Luther Strange.
And so,
and that's who Mitch McConnell was supporting as well.
Exactly. And they dumped a bunch of money into it too, right? That, you know, the National Republicans dumped a bunch of money into it. And so the news media was reporting of, because, you know, they're very good at reporting on horse races. And when they have two sides to things, they can actually do their job of covering it. But then they get stuck in that narrative. Right. So for what was going on down there is that people are saying, oh, Trump was issued a mighty blow. Right. By Steve Bannon. Right. So it has to be this kind of warrior stuff. And, you know, Trump was kind of like, yeah, he went down and campaigned for him, but he was more interested in kind of being at the mic to talk about the NFL players than he really was for Luther Strange. And then he was like, you know, to Twitter and stuff shortly afterwards, like, eh, maybe I made a mistake with this guy. Right. So to think that this is Trump has any investment whatsoever in this. Now, McConnell, that's a different story, right? McConnell definitely had an investment in Luther Strange. I think Trump was just doing it like he was probably somebody kind of told him he had to go.
Right. Now I have to go do this.
Yeah. And he went down there. I said, oh, well, at least I'll be able to talk about the, you know, those bad NFL players.
Message.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, I mean, that's all he was. He was about
a Luther Strange campaign rally, then gets co-opted into a Donald Trump rally for president.
Totally. That's it. That's all it was. I mean, so to say this was like Trump versus Bannon, I think is a little bit like missed the mark. I mean, but this again, it's like, you know, all the, you know, the media is very good at covering the people at the top. They're not very much just looking at strategy and down below. And
but so also, I mean, Luther Strange became governor, or no, became senator because he was investigating the governor and possibly trying to impeach the governor of Alabama. So, you know, that's why Strange became senator, and that might have had a little something to do with it, but still.
Yeah, we don't like it when people try to mess with the way we like to do things in Alabama. Alabama does not take a knee, Sean. That's, I mean, he basically said that. Moore did in the, his campaign stuff.
I know. Like 2 days later, like right around that, well, we're going to talk about this a bit later on, but Wagner does the same thing. He pretty much releases an op-ed, a statement saying the same exact thing about taking a knee, and Pennsylvania won't be doing that.
Yep, that's exactly it. So here's – I'll lay this out for everybody now, and just so that you can watch it unfold, you can come back to this podcast, right, in the future, say, yep, that's exactly what's going on in terms of the playbook. So here's what Roy Moore did, right, and I think that Steve Bannon was kind of like coaching him along this. I don't think he needed a lot of help to pursue this. This guy is kind of an ideologue, and I think he believes this stuff. But this is how the messaging is going to go, and this is how people get rallied. So the first thing, if you watch the video, Moore's campaign video about the night before the election, first thing he does, it's all culture wars, right? First thing is about NFL, about standing for the national anthem. He tells a story about this 90-year-old veteran who apparently is in the audience, who actually stood and put his hand over the heart for the national anthem, and then riles up the crowd. Then he starts talking about, you know, quasi-racial stuff, gets everyone really whipped up in a frenzy. Right. They're cheering. They're behind him. They're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then the next shoe that comes down is about the free enterprise and getting the government to free up business. Right. And you hear the people cheering. And I guarantee you the vast majority of people that were cheering and they were all whipped up in that frenzy for the first part about the culture warrior, the kind of white nationalist garbage. Right. Not overt, but it was there. That were whipped up for that are going to be people who will be hurt the most by those free enterprise policies that he's advocating for. But that's the message, right? And you can see it play out. And you see the same thing with Wagner. You see the same thing with Trump. This is kind of what moves forward. And so let's not be surprised by it in the future.
Yeah. I know this is definitely the playbook for future candidates.
No, it is. And I think it's going to be even more so. And we're going to talk more about some of the campaign stuff when we get in the second segment. We're talking more specific about Pennsylvania. But you know, that matters, right? Because, you know, one of the things that Roy Moore talks about is how that, you know, look, like the Senate doesn't blame Trump. Right. He actually says in his clip, right, the night before, he says, you know, when Trump was elected in 2016, right, there was so much hope in the land. Right. But then he diverts it away and he says, but then what happened? The Senate couldn't even pass the repeal of Obamacare and throw all you people in my audience off insurance, right? You know, it's like they couldn't even do that. And that's why he's going to be there. So this is why I'm saying like this, it's a whole false like narrative that this is Trump versus Bannon, right? This has more like the Republican establishment, right? In terms of its tone, right, as opposed to its practice, is really what's at stake here, because you know that's what he wanted. So this was all about how the Republican establishment was bad and is standing in the way of the kind of, you know, repealing Obamacare, like, you know, building the wall, sending the immigrants home, all the stuff about Bannon's kind of white nationalist stuff. And frankly, that's stuff that Trump is on board with for the most part.
Yeah. No, really what this is, man, I forgot what I was going to say.
Well, you come back to it. So let me see. So, I mean, we'll come back. I am a gummy bear. I am a gummy bear. I'm a gummy bear. I'm just saying. I'll leave that up to the audience to figure out what I'm talking about. So, but one of the things why this becomes that much more important is because what we saw, I mean, we're treated across, I'm not laughing at this. I'm laughing at the fact that Sean can barely keep his composure right now. Is that, we got some major things that are going on right now. We've watched the devastation in Puerto Rico over this past week after Hurricane Maria had a direct hit there. And everything is, the stage is set right now for it to be the kind of like shock doctrine extravaganza in the place. Now, there was already moves in Puerto Rico to kind of privatize the infrastructure, privatize the electrical grid. That's the real get-go. And now you've got, you know, again, the ramped up calls to basically privatize the infrastructure, right? Saying that now is the time because, you know, the government has been able to do this. But, you know, you have a government that's been kind of hand and fist in some of this to kind of helping and encouraging the privatization of that infrastructure. So, and which blew my mind, Goldman Sachs is actually going in and basically buying up sort of the roads. The toll roads, the most profitable toll roads in the country right now, and they're going to operate them for like several years on out, and basically profit taking. So instead of that money going into the government's coffers in Puerto Rico, it's going to go into Goldman Sachs' coffers. Right. So we're seeing this happen. Now, this is all in a context, right? When
now, is this stuff that was going on, or this is happening in response to the hurricane?
Some of it is going on. So the electrical grid in particular was going on before. The road stuff, there was talk about some of the privatization and stuff, but now it's just like there's no one else that can do that. Right, because the roads are devastated, right? I mean, this is what disaster capitalism is about, right? What Naomi Klein wrote all about. The natural disaster comes in, the roads are devastated, the government is like, you know, is in debt.
And the
reason why it's in debt is because of, you know, the Jones Act, which basically prevents Puerto Rico from having ships go directly to them. They have to go through kind of the ports in Florida. So, there's a lot of reason that's behind it. Check out yesterday's majority report. That's Thursday's majority report for a good discussion on this about what's actually happened in Puerto Rico. But this happens like in the midst of where you've got over a week and there's been virtually no response. That everyone that's on the ground there says that, look, there's actually people from FEMA who are in place. There's doctors there. There's all people that are there. But there is no direct.
Nothing overseeing what's going on.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. Because, no, this is starting to become a failure beyond like belief at this point. Like it's. But no, it's like, Chapo Trap House put up their podcasters and they make a good point. Like 50% of this country doesn't even think that Puerto Ricans are American citizens. So why should they even be getting this aid? They should be seeking international aid from other countries.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
They're saying this should be something that the international community deals with because of it's a human crisis, not because it's an American thing.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And again, these are American citizens we're talking about. American citizens who basically pay a third more, right? A third more for their gas, for their food, for everything else because of these outmoded laws that are on the books that are preventing Puerto Rico from kind of basically having a self-sustaining economy, right? I mean, for example, just give you an example, the Jones Act, one of the things that happens in there is that Puerto Rico is prevented by law, right, for having its own shipbuilding industry. It's a freaking island, people. Right. I mean, what do islands do? That is kind of one of the kind of key industries that they could do. They're prevented by law for doing that. Right. And that is kind of like there's just one example. Another example is there was just a recent Supreme Court case that basically says Congress basically can override any law that's passed in Puerto Rico. Right. So it basically reduced Puerto Rico's status from what
it's a colony. It's a
it's a territory. Property. They call it a property, right? It is the property of, right? It is a possession of the United States government, not even a commonwealth, which would give it kind of different sets of rights. But that basically gives the Congress, like, they can kind of get rid of any law that they want. And that, I guarantee you, what we're going to be talking about Puerto Rico now for the next, like, decade, if not more, because of what is going to happen there, it's going to be, it's going to be Kansas, right, in the ocean, right? I mean, we're going to watch the kind of the austerity measures teachers and the right-wing agenda.
It's going to become a laboratory for future attacks.
That's exactly. You put it perfectly. So, I mean, we got to keep an eye on that. But in the meantime, folks, if you can, if you can, right, if you give, you can kind of help out in any way by giving donations to the folks in Puerto Rico. I'll put a link in the show notes. It's a place that's actually, not going to, skim money off the top and things like that, ideally, but that are actually trying to help people on the ground. So, and this happens in the wake, Sean, of climate scientists. They just had a report that came out, and Think Progress, Think Climate had a report that came out on this, and literally climate scientists were floored. The folks at NOAA and NASA, but NOAA is the one to put out the report, is basically saying that, look, century old records. Right. Temperature records for September have just been blown out of the water for this heat wave that has been running through the Midwest and the East Coast. And that does not bode well.
No. I actually have been suffering through this heat wave. I took my air conditioner unit out about a month and a half ago. And I was just, like, looking at the weather like over the next few weeks. I'm like, all right, it's going to be like mid-70s. It's the end of August. Beginning of September, it looks like this is going to happen for the whole entire month. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
At some point, you're just like looking down the lines like, all right, it's just – the thing is just taking up too much electricity at this point for it to be – and it's too nice out.
Right.
So I took my air conditioner out of the window. And about for like the past week and a half, it's just been humid as all hell out here. And then, 2 days at like 90, 92 degrees out here, I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't believe how hot it got. We're all just like, is it over yet?
Yeah. And, I think, we're all experiencing this, right? Like, the heat of it, it's been so hot. My kids are complaining. My kids' school doesn't have air conditioning, right? So they go, they're in there, they're sweating and all this kind of stuff. And it seemed warm. I hadn't realized exactly how warm it had been until I was kind of reading, looking at the comparisons of previous years. And, and maybe some of that has to do with the way that the hurricane season kind of like ramped up, then pushed jet stream north. I don't know. Again, these are the climate catastrophes that we can expect. And, if there's a perfect example, what connects us to Puerto Rico? I mean, other than the fact that we should care, that we, they're American citizens or just people in general, right, who are going to be victims of this kind of climate catastrophe. But we're seeing the direct connections with, the kind of warming of the planet, with the kind of heat wave that we just gone through here in the, the Upper East and what's just happened in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Man, crazy. So, Sean, so another thing that we just want to kind of touch on, you came up with this right before we went to show about the story about this lawsuit against Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, no, it just seemed like I was just browsing around my Facebook feed before we went on. It seemed like that someone brought a lawsuit up against DeRay McKesson from Baltimore, and it was anonymous police officer, and basically tried to sue him and sue the movement, but the lawsuit was dismissed because you cannot sue a movement.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, right? Is that you see an attempt here for an anonymous police officer, number one, which is bizarre to me. Like, how do you file an anonymous lawsuit, right?
I'd love you to probably have someone file on behalf of you, or...
Yeah. No, I mean, I you know how you do it, but I mean, the tech, yeah. But it was kind of crazy. But what was interesting there too, as well, is like, and this is the point that you brought up, is like, is this actually, is this testing the waters to see how to go about maybe through legal action, through basically
bankrupting.
Yeah, by bankrupting people. But by the judge basically coming out and say, look, you can't sue a movement. A movement is not an organization. A movement is not a corporation. A movement is made up of like individuals who are kind of like part of something here. So, we'll see. I mean, we'll keep an eye on this because we'll see if we see more of this coming forward. Is this a legal strategy that is emerging on the right, or is this something that, was cooked up locally in Baltimore? We'll see.
But, yeah.
Yeah. And in the meantime, there was also, this was just a week of activism, and we saw what happened with the NFL this past week. We saw ADAPT activists arrested and dragged away in protest and to protest against the Graham Cassidy bill. I mean, you said at least last week you said that you're going to be watching football all Sunday. So I'm curious about it. I mean, I watch Star Trek, of course, right? And I'll talk about that at the end. But I'm curious what it was like seeing that stuff as you're watching it, right? What were the commentators saying, and what were the kind of the backgrounds of it?
Well, I wasn't watching football or something. I was actually working.
Oh, so you lied. You told me you were watching football.
Well, no, I was watching football at work. Uh-huh. Gotcha. But no, it it's just one of those issues that, like, it's a culture war issue. That's all it is, plain and simple. It's been turned into, you know, like, one side is, I don't know how I feel about the NFL doing it en masse. I feel like that's co-option, mm-hmm. right? Sam Cedar had, like, a really good point about that. At that point, you're just co-opting a protest and you're giving it, like, you know, it's about unity within the NFL, which, yes, is a good thing, but you're getting rid of that message that, like, about police issues. Like, you're taking the protest away from its original point.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You know, there was a piece in the New York Times. It was an op-ed. It was not just the New York Times. It was elsewhere, too. It was an op-ed from Eric Reid. Like, Eric Reid, of course, was Colin Kaepernick's teammate, right, the San Francisco, and was the first NFL player to basically, you know, take a knee right beside him, right, and not let him stand alone. And he wrote this op-ed in the New York Times about this. And I thought, you know, again, maybe this will have a move that will bring it back to the issues of systemic racism and police violence. Why, you know, Kaepernick was out there to begin with, and not allow the kind of NFL owners or NFL teams and things like this to try to make this about the league, right? To make this about what the issues were. So we're going to see, you know, we'll see where this goes. But I thought that piece by Eric Reid was quite good. If you haven't checked that out, again, I'll have links in the show notes on it. So it's because that's really what's got to come back. You know, look, you know, NFL and these sports teams, the NBA, of course, you know, NBA has been all over this, too, as well, especially after Trump's attacks. And the NBA, you know, as they say, is a little bit more woke than the NFL in terms of the racial politics. So, you know, LeBron James was kind of going all after Trump for his comments on this, but was also clear. Several NBA players were also clear, bringing it back to their questions that Kaepernick, you know, Kaepernick's protest. So while the initial
and really like,
yeah, go ahead.
I mean, what this does is this, like, the fact that we're having this conversation shows you, like, the power that the white nationalists have in this country, like, in just framing this debate, like,
that's a good
point. With Trump being, you know, Trump is a white nationalist. He's a racist. He's a bigot. He's this, like, all the, you have a bunch of Republicans coming out against this across the country. Scott Wagner's one of them. Mike Regan's another. You know, and Chuck Michaelhenny in your area is yep. another person that signed on to this, going after the NFL. It's just it's dog whistle politics, but the dog whistle's very loud
yep.
at this point. Like, I mean, the fact that we have to talk about, you know, no, it's not people disrespecting the flag. It's people having legitimate concerns about being shot and killed by the police, right? I mean, Michael Bennett could have been shot and killed by the police last month after the McGregor fight, you know, from the Seattle Seahawks. Mm-hmm. I mean, we saw a video of that coming out, and we saw him release a statement on that. Like,
no, I mean, and if you look at, talk about the dog whistle politics around it, it's like so much of the discourse on the right, you see the right wing media right now about the NFL, is what they're hammering home is like, these players are ungrateful, right? They're ungrateful. Look at this. They're unappreciative and ungrateful, right? Like, I don't even know.
You're trying to make this a class issue.
Well, and it's a race issue. It's like that yeah. they were given. Right.
Yeah.
That we allowed these people to come into the NFL. Right. We opened up our white only's club to these black folks. And now they're ungrateful. That's what they're saying. Right. On the yeah. right wing.
It's slave owner mentality.
No, that's exactly it. It's like as if you're kind of your fat ass bacon eating, like pork rind chowing, like ass sitting there on the couch watching TV is what gave that person got that person on the NFL. No, it's not. Right. I mean, what actually happened there was that, you know, those people could work their butts off, right, in order to get in there saying. And so you're actually claiming, you know, that you're ungrateful, you know, and, you know, you get these folks on Fox News, they'll come out with this, you know, and they were given the big boost, right, because, you know, what's his face? Hannity's gone to 9 o'clock now and a big deal. So he kind of leads now with the culture war stuff right now on prime time. I think they actually purposely did that so, you know, to make sure that their viewers were not going to kind of sneak over to Rachel Maddow and see what's happened with the Russian hackers. But
yeah. Talk about another interesting story that this week.
Well, yeah, you kind of started messaging me about this as Maddow was on.
Yeah, it's you know, like the social media thing. I've been skeptical about a lot of the Russian stuff. I feel like I've been getting drowned out, but this is actually like one of the stories. I was just clicking through, seeing what's on TV or on my computer, what Maddow was leading with, and it was the Russian the hacking story, but around social media, which I find that to be like an actual in my opinion, an important story. It actually like grabbed my attention to sit there the whole 25 minutes and listen to it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, she makes like really interesting points, and the stuff that's coming out now with this story, I think there's a lot more to it. You know, you have Russian agents or Russian whatever people buying ads in Baltimore and Maryland, supporting Black Lives Matter, and then you have them doing the opposite thing in a white rural part of the country.
Right.
I mean, like, it's creating instability, and that's what they want. I mean, it seems like they're devising a way to come up with a way to become a world superpower, the sole superpower, and they're not going to do it by fighting, you know, a massive land war or air war. They're going to do it online and use propaganda for it, and they're doing it effectively.
Yeah.
I mean, like, look at the election results that happened in Germany this past week. You know, with the AfD getting a lot of Russian media behind them, a lot of Trump media behind them, you know, and a white nationalist, anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim party is now has a bunch of seats in the German parliament, which is something so extreme it hasn't been since like the 60s or the 40s. A group that far right is represented in its parliament the way it is.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. I mean, to see that happening in Germany.
I mean, we're watching this stuff unfold in real time.
Yeah,
you know, exactly with the connections between Bannon and Nigel Farage being in Alabama, you know, Breitbart being in Europe, having a presence in Europe, the AfD, the UKIP. I mean, we're watching this rise of like libertarianism or like the fascism, what it is, in real time, and there's nothing we can do to stop it. Looks like at this point.
Yeah, and it's libertarian. You know, it's funny because I knew folks in Germany who were there was a guy who called in the Majority Report yesterday or the day before. He's a German guy, and he actually had been part of kind of anti-fascist groups for like a decade and a half or something. And he gave some background of the kind of rise of this the AfD in Germany, and you know, basically saying it's a faction that came out of the FDP that kind of split off and went further. Now, the FDP was the kind of libertarian party in Germany. They had been, you know, fairly kind of minority party, but had been your typical libertarian kind of conjuncture, socially liberal for the most part, right? You know, but economically, you know, get rid of the government and just have let the free market do what it does, you know, get rid of social programs, all that kind of stuff. And it had – when I had spent time in Germany, and this is probably like, God, 15 years – more than that. More than that, like 15 plus – more than – 15, 17 years ago. I had known people. They're kind of friends of – or family members and friends of people that I knew there. Even at that point, they were attracting a younger crowd, and had very actively gone after kind of a younger crowd to support this kind of free market stuff. They're very much mirrored here. What this guy had called into the Majority Report was saying is basically, you've got that section of the FDP, but now you're wedding it to this kind of like anti-racist action, right? This anti-immigrant action, this anti-immigrant stuff, which had been brewing there for a long, long time. We saw it kind of it came to the fore when you had reunification, right? In terms of othering Eastern Germans, but then you had a whole bunch of Turkish refugees who would come in, and when I was there, right? And again, this is like what, 99, 2000 or so. When I was there, people were openly, not like on the news, right? Not in the in the newspapers, but you could hear people being superly anti-Turkish and about this kind of immigration there. So it was ripe for that. And now we see it bursting forward in terms of an actual political party.
Yeah. And one of the things that CNN pointed out, that they, like one on their website, was most of their support came from Eastern Germany. And the reason why they saw this, they got the support, was the immigrant issue, but also the failure of them recuperating state-owned or state benefits that the Eastern Communist German society brought forward, but like not having the social service provided to them from the West.
That's absolutely and right. And that was the big issue of reunification, right? Reunification, there was what was the front and center about reunification was like, how was that going to happen and what were you going to do in terms of rebuilding, right? Some of the folks, more progressive left folks from East Germany, not the, you know, Soviet left, right? But the, you know, the kind of progressive left there were saying that, look, we need to almost think about this of having, you need a Marshall Plan for East Germany, right? Where the West German government was basically going to help kind of rebuild the East, right? And bring it into the economy, right? There was such pushback against that, right? And that it happened in kind of like, you know, fits and starts and nowhere near what it needed to. And so that economic divide, that class divide has remained.
Yeah. I know someone who stayed in Dresden for some time, and basically they do feel like they're treated like second-class citizens. And that's where a lot of this hatred or a lot of this is where that party flourished in this. You know, most of their support, a large chunk of their support is coming from East Germany.
Yep. Yep, it's crazy, man. So, you know, here you go. This is the kind of, you know, the real globalists, right? Or the other globalists, right? There's the globalists that are, you know, supposedly, you know, trying, you know, the Davos group, right? You got those globalists who want to kind of make, you know, neoliberalism the global, a global movement. And then you've got the globalists who want to make it a fascist world. So, here you go. And you got Elon Musk who wants to just kind of like leave the earth altogether. So, hey, we got it all together. All right. So, this is, we're going to kind of think about moving in and talk a little bit about some stuff in Pennsylvania here. I want to remind everybody that, look, if you like what we're doing here, if you like support what we're doing at Raging Chicken Press, consider to becoming a member for as little as $5 a month. Just go to ragingchickenpress.org, click on the support membership tab, and you'll be on your way. Remember, we've got a special running through the end of October. You come in at the $10 a month level, right? And we'll send you Mark Bray's book, Antifa, the Anti-Fascist Handbook, or Raging Chicken Stay Woke mug. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We will be back right after this break.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1931. Canadian coal miners, their wives, and children marched through the streets of Estevan, Saskatchewan. The miners were on strike for union recognition and better pay and working conditions. Safety was a major concern for the 600 men and boys who worked in the mines. Water collected in many work areas. Too often, the mine companies failed to replace rotting timber, so roof cave-ins were frequent. Inadequate ventilation led to high concentrations of carbon dioxide. For braving this dangerous underground work, the miners earned only 25 cents for each ton of coal. The miners had joined the Mine Workers Union of Canada earlier that year. They called a strike in September, but coal mine operators refused to meet their demands. Miners and their families decided to demonstrate in the town of Estevan to gain community support. The mayor banned the demonstration and called upon the Royal Canadian Mounted Police to crush the march. The Mounties met several hundred miners and their families and attempted to block the procession. They opened fire on the unarmed crowd. Three striking miners were killed, and many others were wounded and arrested. Finally, on October 6th, the mine owners finally agreed to an 8-hour workday and a minimum wage of $4 a day. But they refused to recognize the union. It was not until the end of World War II that the United Mine Workers finally won recognition in the Saskatchewan coal fields. The strike remains a controversial event in Estevan. The three miners who were killed have the inscription "Murdered by RCMP" on their headstones. Over the years, locals have alternately erased and restored these inscriptions.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in Two.
At Kutztown University, ensuring a caring campus community is one of our top goals. We value and respect all of our constituents and celebrate diversity.
That's right, folks. That was Kutztown University President Hawkinson telling us about the caring community at Kutztown University. This is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press, returning once again. So you recall that last week we talked to you, we told you a little bit about what was happening at Kutztown University with an adjunct faculty member who found out right at the beginning of the semester after they got sick and found out that they needed basically life-saving surgery. That the university administration, in consultation with the State System of Higher Education's Chancellor's Office, decided that the best course of action then was to kick this person to the curb, kick them off health insurance, get rid of their job, and send them out into the wind. So that flies in the face of their new branding efforts, of course, to posit Kutztown University as the caring community. So just wanted to give you a little update as we kind of lead into this segment. So what had happened is that the university, basically the university administration, basically said that they were following orders from the state system. There was nothing that they could do, threw their hands up in the air and kind of, you know, hope for the best, I guess. Well, the faculty union was not gonna stand for that. You can hear, like I mentioned again, Amanda Morris talk on the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this weekend a little bit about that. But the good news here, if there's any good news to come out of this, is that the faculty union has helped, and actually Raging Chicken Press too as well. We've put links in articles that I've been writing about this to basically raise money for to cover the COBRA cost for this person. And we needed to raise well over $3,000. Last I found out, the last update I got, which was yesterday, was Thursday. There had been more than $4,500 raised by individuals in support of this adjunct. So now all the COBRA payments will be covered for at least several months. A couple rent, at least 2 months, I think, of rent is going to be covered now. That we're just trying to get some more out there to help pay their bills. So I want to thank, if there's anybody out there who's listening who contributed to that and contributed to the efforts to try to make sure that this person is not going to be sent out into the wind, and that you decided to join in with a vision of the future that is about solidarity and caring as opposed to everyone's for themselves. I appreciate it. So, you know, this is the real caring community, right? When we stand up for each other, right? And then now we're going to demand not simply that we, you know, give charity for that one person, but that we change the policy, that we make sure that this never happens again. So thanks, everybody out there. So good news, Sean, I guess.
Yeah, this seems like it might be the only good news of this week.
Well, you know, it's always comes. All the good news comes with like a tinge of the edge, right? It's more of like good news that comes out of resistance rather than good news that comes out of like, you know, affirmative action, you know. And I don't mean affirmative action in terms of like, you know, how we talk about it, but I mean positive action in order to kind of move us forward in a progressive direction. So.
Yeah, sometimes you got to push a little.
Yeah, sometimes you got to push a little. And I think we're going to have to push extra hard now after we see what's kind of transpiring here in the gubernatorial race already.
Yeah. So for the notes I put together for this segment, I think we should just get put right front and center. Scott Wagner is a white nationalist.
Period. Okay, we're done with this segment. Let's go. No.
But no, I think like after what we've seen over the past few weeks, the past couple months, the way, you know, Scott Wagner's talked about, you know, pretty much minorities working in low paying jobs, they got to put a belt on, get their pants down from their asses, you know, going to the Senate and saying that type of stuff, and also then like, you know, giving $1,000 to Lyndon LaRouche, you know, doing all this type of stuff, now pandering to Steve Bannon at Phyllis Schlafly Put Americans First rally. I think it's now time the conversation is this guy's a white nationalist.
Yeah, let me.
And
let
there's,
me, let
there's me. Nothing else. I mean, there's a lot more to that, but I think we have to start. You know, when you align yourself with someone the likes of someone who's associated with Nigel Farage and what's happening in Europe with Breitbart, with the largest platform, white nationalist platform in the country. You're aligning yourself with him. It's time that you're labeled as one.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, this is a guy who's been barking up that tree for a while now, you know. And so let me just remind everybody, this is what Scott Wagner had to say about Fight for 15 activists who were arguing for the rise of minimum wage. So Sean's point there about going after workers through a racialized narrative. Here it is. This is Scott Wagner.
So the workers that are down here in the hallways looking for work, I'd be happy to give them some numbers of employers in York that would probably pay wages somewhere between $12 and $15 an hour. But there are a couple things required. Number one, you would have to have an alarm clock, and you would have to be able to get out of bed. You would be able to have to pass a drug test, and you would have to have some work ethic. I don't go into fast food restaurants every now and then, but maybe I'll stop for a coffee. And periodically, you'll notice somebody behind the counter on a cell phone, either talking on the cell phone or texting, and that's clearly against the company policy. You know, you'll look around, and you know, anywhere you go, there are younger workers with their pants hanging down, rear ends hanging out. They really don't care about their appearance. I don't care if you pay somebody $20 an hour. If they have a certain behavior, it's not going to change their behavior, and this is realism. We have given out so many government benefits over the last 5 years that we have more people riding the wagon than pulling the wagon.
Well, there you have it, right? I mean, talk about dog whistle politics right there.
He's he sounds like the Big Lebowski without the Big Lebowski little urban achievers. Like,
yeah.
I mean, this is like exactly how he's talking right now. And really, like the comment about like people need to stop having their pants hang around the rear ends, he's basically talking using a very loud dog whistle about black people.
That's right.
Like at that point. I mean, and, you know, he's given money to Lyndon LaRouche, who is very anti-Semitic, denied the Holocaust ever happened. He... you know, has a history of this stuff. And then he's aligning himself with people who are outright fascist, Holocaust deniers. You know, it's a platform for that stuff. And this is the company he's keeping. You know, it's time. It's really now time, not just on our end, but it's, you know, responsible for the media, especially the statewide media, to just call him a white nationalist at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see what's left, right? I mean, once you throw in with Bannon, and you throw in with that whole crowd. I mean,
you might as well just throw yourself in with David Duke.
Right. And I think, you know, I look any of the kind of, of the statewide media, Pennsylvania kind of like, you know, professional, traditional media here, who have written stories about Trump's white nationalism or ties with white nationalism. And if they refuse to do that for Scott Wagner, we need to call out those media outlets on that, too.
Yeah. Looking at Penn Live.
Just saying.
And others. But no, I mean, like, you know, people around the media were, you know, quickly to call out Trump as a fascist, as a alt-rightist and stuff like that. Now it's time to do the same thing with Scott Wagner. If you're not, you're neglecting your job at this point.
No, that's right. And here's a perfect example. I actually was talking with some people about this last week when they were asking me about, you know, the article that I ran for Kutztown University. Right. I had some people ask me, like, man, are you going to get in trouble for that? Right. And I was, you know, and my response was like, well, look, number one, the reason why I wanted to work at a place that had a union. Right. So I had some sort of protection. But number two, right, you know, there's this whole idea that you're not supposed to piss where you sleep, so to speak. Right. You know, piss in your own backyard. Right. I think that's so fundamentally wrong. Like the places that you know the most about that you're not willing to be critical of. Right. I mean, that to me is like, you know, abrogating your responsibility to what you need to be doing. And if you know something's wrong in your backyard, you got to take care of business. Right. And there can't be anything more to the truth. And we're talking about the Pennsylvania media. If you're not going to cover your statewide politicians in a way that is going to, in the same way that you would Trump, right, with a nice distance that's happening out there, then, you know, then you've got some soul searching to do. Because Pennsylvania, man, it's been a hotbed of white nationalist stuff for a long time. And it's going to get played out in this election.
And now it's getting worse, too.
Yes, absolutely.
We could talk a little bit about that, I guess, later on, you know, putting some of the faces of the local identity rope out on blast, but
yeah, we're definitely gonna have to talk about that, aren't we?
So, you know, moving on from Scott Wagner being a white nationalist, we're now seeing Trump versus Bannon narrative in the Mango versus Wagner story. You know, like Scott Wagner has aligned himself with the Trump, trying to be like out trumping the other candidates in this, which is really only Paul Mango at this point. You know, by getting Steve Bannon, by going after the NFL players, basically echoing the same words that Roy Moore has echoed since his election. Mango has been aligning himself with the people who opened up the Trump office out here, the really big one, sort of like the central point for their campaign. It's because of, you know, this area, like Trump literally believes that, you know, central Pennsylvania delivered him the presidency.
Yeah, well, you know.
And it's only about an hour and a half away from D.C., so it's not that far of a drive. You know, this isn't like Virginia or something like this. And also local funders and donors who are associated with that Trump office are raising money or having fundraisers for Paul Mango. And Mango has aligned himself with Trump's Pennsylvania campaign manager for the election, David Urban.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, the infrastructure is all there. So we're going to see this play out. We're going to see it play out right in front of us.
We might even see Nigel Farage out here in Pennsylvania.
Yep. Yep.
Which, how fucking nuts is that?
Yeah, no, but I mean, it is what it is. You know, this is what, you know, what Banditelli was saying, like, you know, on Twitter. He's like basically saying if they looked at, you know, what happened in Schuylkill County, right? You know, as he put it, the Skooks were kind of came out kind of strong for Trump, right? They're a +6 or something like this for Trump in the strongest counties, but nobody went there. Right, to actually cover it, and the Pennsylvania media didn't go out and kind of find out what's going on in kind of Schuylkill County, right? They wouldn't respond to that at all. And so now we have it once again. We're going to see the same dynamics play themselves out. And now you've got a campaign infrastructure, you know, through Dave Urban that is going to make this happen. And look, if I were, you know, if I wanted to be, well, it's not even a conspiracy. It's more like this. I was going to say, if I wanted to kind of look at this through systemically, what's going to happen is that you're going to have this dynamic between, you know, the Trumpsters and the Bannonites, right, kind of play itself out. And the media is going to want to cover it, again, as a horse race. Which side will win, right? But the ultimate goal there for someone like Bannon, right, and for some of these things is the same. It doesn't really matter.
And one of the things is I really think that we're going to watch here is how Wagner – makes his bed with the white nationalists.
Yep.
In the state.
Well, look, they're both going to do it.
I mean, there's already like a bunch of like the alt-right groups on Reddit and stuff like that, and especially Trump and PA are 100% behind Wagner.
Yeah.
The alt-right community online is 100% behind Wagner. It's going to be interesting to see how this community plays itself out for this election, especially with Wagner. If he has the alt-right behind him, how's he going to respond to white nationalists in this state?
No, that's right. And you know what question?
It took him a week to say anything about Charlottesville.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then even when he did say something about it, he made himself the victim for being forced to respond to Charlottesville.
Yeah. Well, they made me talk about it. They made me say something that I didn't want to say. Right. That's really what you know, his old pouting, his online pouting was all about.
Yeah. So
it's crazy, you know, and it's I don't know. It's just seeing this way this stuff is going to play out has got really disturbing. What I'd like to know. And again, this is an open question for anybody who's listening out there and might know about this, right? But I'd like to know how much time has the Pennsylvania Democratic Party spent going to those areas that were Trump strongholds and building an infrastructure since the election, right? My guess, right, and I want to be proven wrong in this, my guess is there's been virtually nothing done. Right. That's going to be my guess. So we'll see. Now, I might be wrong about this. Now, I want to make a clear line of distinction here that is different than talking about the Democratic activists on the ground in different locations who have been doing things.
Like Easttown Democratic Club.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. East Penn Democratic Club has been doing amazing work. Right. They've been nonstop organizing since the election, actually even before the election. But the election kicked it into like double overdrive. So actually, in communities, those groups are already established, have been doing like bang up work. But you know what? Where is the resources coming from the Democratic Party to kind of support those efforts, right? I'd love to hear like how much of that's happening. I'd love to hear, for example, about, you know, all the Democratic activism and organizing that's going on in Schuylkill County right now, right? I bet you that's going to be like crickets. But, you know, I want to be proved wrong. So if you know what's going on out there, you know those examples, you know, hit us up, RagingChickenPress.org or RagingChickenPress@gmail.com. Send me stuff like that. I'd love to put it on and kind of talk about it next week and, you know, get in touch with some folks who are doing that organizing. So crazy. So meanwhile, we got to hear from Mike Reagan's junk on Twitter this week.
I don't know what you're talking about with that.
It's just too bad. Mike Reagan's junk started appearing on Twitter. That was their kind of handle for it. And
it went limp all of a sudden.
It went limp pretty quickly. So it'd be kind of, I'd love to know what that was all about. But, you know, I was bummed because it had a lot of promise, especially in the wake of Mike Regan just kind of like once again showing why he's an idiot.
He can't even name a bridge correctly. And he's he's getting his inspiration for his Senate co-sponsor memos from like old Disney sports movies that like tell the one side happy narrative about things. Yeah. So where do we start with this?
Well, this is in the wake of the NFL, right? I mean, the wake of the take a knee protest that took place
here. This is Monday afternoon. He shoots out a tweet saying he's going to introduce a resolution condemning the un-American protest that happened with the NFL and how they're disrespecting the anthem. I'm not going to say anything about this, but his district is 94.something% white.
Just saying?
Yeah, just saying.
Well, and he is drinking the same water as
Daryl Metcalf.
Right? I mean, they're kind of friends on the border there of kind of their district. So
that Mike Regan's across the river from me.
Oh, he's across the river. Oh, he's not. He's across the river.
You're thinking of Bernstein, the other guy.
I'm thinking of Bernstein. Oh man, sorry. My apologies to
Daryl Metcalf
for saying that you lived that far into the hinterlands.
But he has
of
neighbor Eichelberger. So
yeah. No, true enough. But yeah, Regan's across the river. Sorry, you know, this is where, you know, it pays to have Sean out there in Harrisburg to actually get the geography right, because I clearly can't.
Yeah, but so.
Well, the crazy thing, right, is that as part of the bill, like, he basically
the co-sponsor memo.
I'm sorry, as part of the co-sponsor memo, he like is citing Jackie Robinson, right,
this
as the example, right?
Yeah. So this is what he writes. Gotta keep my composure for this because it's absolutely hilarious. The intersectionality of sports and politics is not a new phenomenon. When Jackie Robinson broke baseball's color barrier in 1947, it was a moment that transcended sports. Muhammad Ali's conscientious objection to the Vietnam War, which a lot of conservatives at the time friggin' hated, let's just keep that in perspective, resulted in a landmark Supreme Court decision. The miracle on ice at Lake Placid was so much more than a hockey game.
Just a deep breath here. I mean, what's remarkable. So this is like, I love it that he leads with the intersectionality, right? So here's like, yo, this is Mike Woke Regan right here, right? Coming at you with intersectionality. I'm going to talk about some black people, and then I'm going to talk about the anti-Russian kind of Soviet Union thing of victory in Lake Placid. And then I'm going to come at you with these weak, weak NFL players who've got the gall, right? Who've got the gall to take a knee and disrespect what's going on here in the national anthem. This is woke Mike Regan talking to you guys. Right? I mean, when I saw the lead on there, like, intersectionality, really? Do you even freaking know what that means, Mike Regan? Like, you freaking idiot? You actually, you know what I mean? And then Jackie Robinson, who was basically would not stand for the national anthem, right?
He never stood for the national anthem.
No, for exactly the same reasons.
It was very explicit as to why he never stood for the national anthem. It's the same exact argument that they're basically using today.
No, exactly. Muhammad Ali was basically, you know, had bodyguards and was thrown in jail, right, and all this kind of stuff, and was the scourge of the right wing, and now he's trying to claim Muhammad Ali. This is how these people rewrite history, right? I mean, it was unbelievable to me.
And I love how the last sentence, the miracle on ice at Lake Placid was so much more than a hockey game, period.
Yeah, right, and, right. So more than a hockey game. They had hot dogs too. You know, I mean,
like it seemed like that was just something like his staff member wrote up, like, oh, I'm gonna sound good here. And then Mike Regan's like looking over, oh wait, I gotta add this in here.
Wait, he's like, wait. I'm looking black people, we need to get some white people in this, some really, really white people. How about, oh, the hockey team? Lake Placid, man. Remember Eric Heiden? Like 5 gold medals, USA hockey team, it was everything, right? I saw a movie about that on Sunday night TV.
Pretty much.
Woke Mike Regan.
I wonder how often he watches Miracle on Ice.
Yeah, I'm sure that's like, you know, around like every holiday, you know,
that's right where his comprehension is at for a movie.
Exactly.
Like, that's all he can handle when watching a movie is some stupid fucking Disney sports movie. Like, he can't go much further than that. Like, he can't go like There Will Be Blood or like things that are like 3 hours and you got to think about it.
You know what? I'm just deciding, man. I want that. I want that handle. Woke Mike Regan. Right? Can you imagine? That'd be great. Woke Mike Regan. Somebody's got to do that. I really, literally, do not have the time for that. But we need to have Woke Mike Regan on Twitter. I would love to see that. And if anybody decides to take up that banner, please let me know, and I will retweet the hell out of it.
So, all right. Well, here's another thing that we were having fun with before the podcast. So I was just like scrolling through the Harrisburg 100 page to see what's been going on, like just like trolling, like lurking on their things.
And someone let me see how the like, other wrote, half lives today, right?
So like yesterday, this is about a Confederate flag post. He's like, I've been trying to tell people that it has been has different meanings. There are Mexican Americans that wrap themselves in the rebel flag. Here it just means country and recheck. They fucked that up. People like to think white Americans are super racist in this country. Look at Sean Kitchen from the Raging Crackhead Press.
Oh, Raging Crackhead Press. That's right, RCP.
When he finds white racists, he finds 5 of 100,000.
There you go. You know, it was there's where do you begin, right? Where do you begin by, you know, first of all, the whiner stuff, right? You know, this is how these people play, right? These people play. They want to play and like, okay, I'm going to try to go after Sean now. I can be really, really like mean.
Unprovoked. And stuff like this. This is just a random message on a random article.
No, but it's showing you, right? They're getting nervous. Like the fact is that you've been reporting on white nationalism for a while, and then this week, right, you decided to put white nationalism on blast, right? And I'm sure that freaked the hell out of all of them.
Yeah, I've been doing this for a while now, right? With like racist business owners, racist people, like stuff on Twitter. Boom, boom, just put them on blast on the Facebook page and let the community take care of it. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This week, you know, some little person working Senate staff, who probably lost his job already, was sending very racist messages to people. And you know what? They've had enough. This kid's been trolling black people since the election, before the election, and they had enough of it. We were able to confirm it. It's just like, all right, let's just put it up online. Like, and then, you know, the very next day, guess what? I got to look on my cell phone. I got a message from a friend about the white Identity Europa members. And one of them was arrested at University of Virginia. So we confirmed that, you know, this person who got arrested at UVA, which really wasn't reported on too much besides just the initial person getting arrested, didn't say which side he was on. This person, Ian Hoffman, was arrested for assault and battery. At the UVA Tiki Torch rally where people were saying Jews will not replace us or you will not replace us. Yeah, he was arrested there and he was out as an Identity Europa member.
Yeah, so there you have it. I mean, you know, you make your bed. I mean, welcome to the world of free speech, right? I mean, free speech doesn't mean you get to say whatever the hell you want and everyone else has to shut up, right? I mean, no. It means you actually have to respond to people. And when you get out of your little internet, like, troll holes and stop, you know, talking to kind of like, you know, just each other and start having to enter the rest of the world, right, where, you know, people actually live their lives, right, not in that thing. Guess what? People are going to respond to you. And just like the Harrisburg 100 guy said, you're going to realize, like, how few of there actually are, right?
And yeah, they're all on your Facebook page.
Exactly, exactly. All your friends, right? So, welcome out of the hole, troll. You know, good luck finding a job now. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, and it's, you know, like, it's, you know, and it's our thing, prerogative that we cover these people. You know, the person, you know, just found out this week, the person who is actually leading Identity Europa now, his name is Eli Mosley, his surname, his fake name. Real name is Elliot Klein. He's from Reading, Pennsylvania.
There you go.
I mean, you know, the Identity Europa members of today are going to be your GOP members of tomorrow.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. And so all the more reason we know who they are, right? I mean, this is what's going on. And this, you know, again, why on earth that we don't have more coverage of this stuff, you know, by the Pennsylvania media, I don't know. But guess what? We're going to do it. If they're not going to do it, we're going to do it. Because this is how it's lining up. You know, look, people have their head in the sand for a while before the last election, right? And, you know, everyone was taken by surprise, including us. I mean, look, I mean, I think Sean and I were probably could have been more easily convinced than most that Trump had a real shot at winning this. A guy, you know, I was listening to, you know, Michael Moore. I remember even talking to you about this and saying, now look, he's got a shot. Like, I'm not counting this guy out. But, you know, now we've learned our lesson. When I'm using the global we here, right, you can't ignore it. So if you don't want a repeat of what just happened in the state of Pennsylvania, if you actually want to keep the governor's mansion in the hands of, like, you know, someone who's not going to fall in with white nationalists, right, well, you've got to act. Right. You got to act not just the kind of organizing that's going on the ground, but we got to cover and expose these movements. Right. That are kind of are breeding hate. Right. And could bring some really, really bad stuff our way.
Yeah. And, you know, we got to start talking about Scott Wagner as if he's a white nationalist because he is one. Treating him as such in the newspapers.
Scott Wagner, white nationalist. Got it, everybody?
And just keep on repeating it and keep on saying it. I know. I mean, like, this thing about Mike Regan, you know, I guarantee you, like, he's a former U.S. Marshal. I can guarantee you Chuck McElhinney's getting involved in this. I can guarantee you that the Philadelphia Fraternal Order of Police or some FOP chapter or some State Troopers Association is pushing this memorandum within the Senate just as a fuck you.
Yeah, well, guess what? And I'll tell you, this is a shout out to all my union brothers and sisters that are out there right now, too, as well. So this is also why that you've got to organize inside your unions, right, to ensure that your union comes out strong against this stuff, right, that these people don't kind of slowly take over our organizations. I'm going to do this. It is not okay, right, just to allow the racist stuff to go by, right? I mean, if anything, this has been one of those divisive histories in the history of unionization, is that when unions do not stand strong and firm, right, against this kind of hatred and against this kind of racism. So, you know, pony up, folks. It's time to get on board. So, all right, Sean, anything else for the good of the order for this segment before we get into the last call?
Still no budget.
Oh, yeah, that's right, the budget.
Still no budget, but the Pennsylvania House this week found a way to do a couple of things, actually. They voted on putting poll watchers across the state, you know, out of county poll watchers, out of district poll watchers, out to any of the polls. So basically allowing, voter intimidation. And then 11 House members from the House Environmental Resources and Energy Committee voted against a resolution to make October Biodiversity Month because of climate change science and all that other stuff.
Sean, my head is really ready to explode. I can't take it. I can't take it.
There are 15 Republicans on that committee. 11 of them voted against making October Biodiversity Month.
There you go.
Up your shaft.
That's all I got to say.
A meaningless resolution. Wasn't really that hard to out themselves on that one.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, man. You know what? I just realized that I need the little sound segment from Star Wars, the one where you have Queen Amidala saying, "This is how democracy dies," right, to thunderous applause. Right. I mean, this is you hear this stuff and you just, man, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, that's it, folks. This is it, right? All hands on deck. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We're going to come right back after this, after that, last call. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Over the past 6 years, we've brought unapologetic, progressive, activist media to Pennsylvania and beyond. We've helped hold those in power accountable and shine a light on some amazing activist work. We've broken national stories and established a reputation as an aggressive, independent media site. As newsrooms close and traditional journalists lose their jobs, hard-hitting, investigative news suffers. If we care about our democracy, we have to find new, sustainable models of journalism. And frankly, no one's going to do it for us. After the Trump election, we dug in even deeper,
Thanks to some longtime members, one-time donations, and a shift in other resources, we brought on more writers and started paying them. Now we're doubling down and want to expand our infrastructure and pay our writers even more. We need to invest in our media if we have a chance to resist the unprecedented assault on democracy, working families, women's rights, and our planet. History will remember the choices we make today. So take a minute to become a member of Raging Chicken Press. For as little as $5 a month, the price of a local craft beer or a cup of coffee, you will be supporting homegrown progressive journalists and media activists. Go to RagingChickenPress.org and click on the Support and Membership tab to become a member. Leave a one-time donation or learn about other ways that you can help. We don't have billionaire backers. Keeping progressive activist media going strong depends on you. Thank you for all your help and support. Keep up the fight.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press, talking to Sean Kitchen, and here we are once again for Last Call. It's the end of the day, and it's been another crazy week, but, you know, that's a cliche at this point because every week is like this now. Welcome to the Trump land. So in this last section, right, for those of you who are newly aboard the podcast mania that is Out the Coop, we like to do little beer stuff, little space news, right, because I'm a space junkie. And this was a big week when space news SpaceX, Elon Musk from SpaceX was down in Australia for this big kind of space conference thing and basically unveiled plans for the big effing rocket. That's actually the code name that they're using in SpaceX to talk about what this is, the BFR, kind of unveiled plans, right, to basically make us an interplanetary species, right? They are now targeting a cargo ships going to Mars in 2022. Now, it should be said that Elon Musk is known, and he will admit this himself, right? He even did it in the talk that he gave, basically said, look, 2022, he said, that's not a typo, right? He said to the audience, they're like, whoa, 2022? He said, that's not a typo. And he said that is, however, aspirational, right? Because one of the criticisms that has come forth with Musk has been that, he overpromises in terms of delivery dates and things like this that happened with Tesla and so on. But the thing that's got to be said about the guy, and it's got to be said about SpaceX, is that they have delivered nonetheless, right? I mean, what Tesla has done in terms of the electronic car manufacturer, in terms of solar roofing, has been unbelievable. And the plans that they have now for to going to Mars and potentially even the moon, and there's some talk that this may be the influence of Mike Pence, right? Because Mike Pence is a big, like, you know, moon guy, right? So this may be Elon Musk and SpaceX's kind of, you know, nod to them to kind of let them to clear a space a path for them to get to Mars. We shall see. But I'll tell you, one of the things that was, I think it's taken a lot of people, it's gave a lot of people's attention. And if you see, there's been articles about this like right across the media, not just in kind of like space.com, where I kind of like spend, you know, parts of my day, right? But also in the New York Times, Los Angeles Times, the Washington Post, and so on, the Guardian, like across the world, has been. They've got a concrete plan, and this BFR rocket that they're talking about doing is actually going to be able to carry up to 100 people, right? To Mars and back, and will not actually have to refuel at Mars. They will not need to refuel and station there. What they're going to planning on doing is basically replacing all of their current rockets, right? All their current kind of space going stuff. So the Falcon, the Dragon, and all that stuff that's actually ferrying things back and forth to the space station right now with this single vehicle, right? And part of the pitch there is that what they're going to be able to do is use this single vehicle for kind of like orbital refueling to go to Mars and all the kind of supply stuff to the space station. They're also going to be able to deliver satellites right into orbit like the size of Hubble, right, without having to have things all folded up and everything like this, but can deliver them kind of into orbit at that size, given how big this thing is. And the other part of that is that there's also this is what they put on the table. They're showing that they basically can use this to actually fly planetary flights, so that you'll be able to go from New York to Shanghai, right, within this rocket, in about 39 minutes, right? Right now, that's about about a 15-hour flight, but you're basically putting people into an intercontinental ballistic missile, basically, and throwing them on the other side of the planet. It's something. It's something.
I don't know how that will work.
Well, I wonder. Here's what I think is actually going on. I might be totally wrong about this. If you look at the plans, they actually lays it all out how this would actually happen. The ship is big enough that you could actually have people, kind of strapped in, fly up and land down. It's just like the SpaceX rockets now that are able to kind of land, right? So they got actually reusable boosters and things like this. Like in the past rockets, you'd have your first stage boosters and stuff would burn up. Not anymore with SpaceX. They have reusable stage boosters. So this one rocket would be able to kind of go up and land kind of on the other side on the other side of the world. And I think that part of what the play there is to demonstrate its current possibilities, as opposed to just making it about space travel, because there's a lot of people out there like you, Sean, right, who are like, look at Mars and just roll their eyes and say, this is all garbage. Why are we talking about it? Right. But the aspiration is kind of brought a little bit further to say, how do you actually close the distance even more? Basically allow us to say, hey, you know what? What do you want to do today? I want to go to Beijing. Boom, hop in there. Boom, fly across the world. Now, of course,
and I'm sure it'll be free to the general public.
Well, that's what I was just about to say. Is like, you know, of course, who we're talking about is global capitalists who are going to be able to do this at this point. But I think that's in part his audience, right? I think in part that the play is to raise money. And the key thing is that they've actually said that by consolidating all these operations, they've got the plan already to pay for it. That was always the big issue. So they're going to be ramping up production on this stuff, and they've already begun tests on the engines and stuff. So I mean it's crazy. I'm telling you, it's like to think that in a stone's throw away, really, you can actually have potentially people on Mars, at the very least within my lifetime. People that are going back and forth on Mars is something else. Now, why do I bring this forward? Yeah, I mean, again, I'm a space geek and I love science fiction and all that other kind of stuff. But the important thing for all of us to pay attention to, right, and why I kind of stay on this all the time, and why I've just been spent last week reading the kind of like the Space Act. Like, I didn't realize that actually in 2008 or so, there was a revision to the Space Act that basically opened up space for private commerce, right, to facilitate that. I didn't realize that the United States has a Department for Space Commerce, right, that has actually been pursuing this since the 90s, right? And I don't think anybody knows this stuff. And I think this is absolutely critical for two reasons, right? One, this is an extension. The way that they're talking about space travel, the way they're talking about this stuff, we're seeing an extension of extractivism, right, gone wild. So that we're seeing, you know, all these industries going about mining, mining ore and kind of mining asteroids and all that to feed that. It's a way of kind of extending what you saw like with the British East India Company, right? You know, you talk about empire, you're talking about Earth empire kind of writ large here. And maybe it seemed like this is hyperbole, but I don't think so at this point. I think that actually we're watching the pieces fall into play. The question is going to really be about what the hell is going to happen to the rest of us? Right. One of the things that Musk had to address at this session in Australia was the fact that this giant rocket, you know what it's going to do, Sean? It's going to put greenhouse gases back into the planet at the same time that they're producing Tesla things. And they're talking about upwards of 1,000 launches a year, right, in order to make all this stuff happen. So are we actually going to see the ramping up of the kind of destruction of Earth, right, as for this kind of this dream of kind of space travel, for this? Or is this going to be, you know, the next capitalist, you know, horizon? I mean, you know, that's one of the things that we always say, empire always needs to expand, right, in order to be sustainable. And this is where what seems to be kind of moving forward, right, is that we're seeing these things practically play themselves out. So, well, you can wake up now. I'm done.
So, I just got an email from Scott Wagner.
Did you really?
A fundraising email.
A fundraising email. Please do tell.
About what we were just talking about earlier. So he said
about space travel.
So, what
about space travel?
No. Last Sunday, I attended an event in St. Louis, and I had the opportunity to meet and spend time with Steve Bannon. And oh boy, the liberals have come completely unglued, especially Tom Wolf. The governor was so unnerved that he scampered right over to his computer and cried racist again, this time in an email sent to supporters. Let's call this exactly what it is. Classic liberal distraction. He wants to change the focus, and who can blame him? If I was Governor Wolf, I'd want to change the focus too. If I was Tom Wolf, I'd think about, talk about anything, blah, 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 budget, and yeah.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
Then it just goes off into Scott Wagner drivel and stuff like that. And
there you go, folks. There you go. Well, I'm sorry for this momentary distraction from my space news. No, but I mean, there you go. Wagner is doubling down, and he's not moving away from it. This sets the stage, right? I mean, it sets the stage about what this race is going to be about.
He's going to run a white nationalist campaign.
Yep. There it is. There it is, folks. Wake up. Boy, oh boy. That just, you took me down from my space news, man. I had to come back to Earth. I did, you know, and it's like sometimes I do need a break, but these people don't let it. They don't let it happen. But another kind of random news. I mean, this is kind of like on, you know, we're going to watch that stuff. And just as a reminder, you know, one of the things that looks like, I think I'm going to be able to make this work, that I'm going to be going to this conference in December. That is going to be in Houston, that is basically bringing, you know, NASA and all these space commerce people in one location. Right. So they're making it real. You know, we're no longer talking about, you know, people writing their fantasy ideas about what to do. You're actually talking about venture capitalists and people that are looking to make these concrete investments. So, you know, I don't want to be in a place in like 20 years to kind of point back and say, see, I told you we should have been paying attention to this. Right. I think it's important. But, you know, I might be proven wrong. And this is all just like, you know, my ability to live in my sci-fi world. We'll see. But the other interesting news in terms of like green energy stuff, Dyson, right, you know, the vacuum cleaner company, right? They said that they're going in with their electric car vehicles, and they've got like some sort of top secret vehicle that they're planning on unveiling in 2020. Did you see anything about this week, Sean?
I did not.
It's actually interesting. They said that they've designed it. They claim, at least at this point, that they've already designed the engine, and they're experimenting right now with two different kinds of battery modes. That they're claiming that is going to. I can't remember the exact numbers, but it's going to be significantly more efficient than anything that's existing now. So basically what that is that they're saying, you know, they're talking about Tesla, right? They're basically saying that this is even more efficient than the Tesla engine, right? And 2020, they're planning to bring it forward. And they said that the chassis has not been built yet. So the actual design, but they're designing everything from the ground up, and they're looking to get in the game. They did, however, like everything else, just like when Tesla first came out, they basically said, yeah, a lot of people ask us about the projected cost of this, right? Like, duh. And he said, the better question is not how much would people be willing to pay, but how much would people be willing to put down on a down payment for the car, right? So it's clearly going to be marketed towards, like, you know, again, your global capitalists and things like this at this point. But again, just in terms of energy process and directions that are going, that's going to be incredible. The other thing that I didn't mention in the show notes coming up was that VW, right, also just unveiled that finally, this has been kind of like a teaser that they've been floating around for a long time, but they just actually unveiled to actually make the to bring back the minivan, right? What the heck was that thing called? The minibus, right? The Volkswagen bus. To bring that back as an all electric vehicle. And that one is on, like, I think 2019, 2020 was the target for that one too as well, which is fascinating because, you know, of course, Volkswagen,
the cultural, the cultural significance that van has.
Well, especially in the wake of Volkswagen basically deceiving governments and lying about their quote unquote clean diesel engines and finding out that it was a fabrication and it was actually not not green at all.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, this is one of the things I was talking to somebody about this last week. It's like, you know, I bet you this was going on because you heard there was a lot of internal stuff happening at Volkswagen about this diesel stuff that they knew it wasn't performing in that way. And so I think that they've had this idea about to move towards electric for a while, but they just couldn't get off the oil, you know, the oil crack. They had to actually kind of keep on down. So they kept the fantasy of clean diesel going because they were raking in the profits for it, because green folks were actually moving over to diesel, to these clean diesel ones, thinking that they were getting more efficient vehicles when in turn they weren't. So now that you know, they have to kind of throw in with it. And I think the fact that they already have the designs, they already have some kind of they've shown some prototypes of what this may look like, shows you that this has been in the works for a bit. But I think that one is going to have a huge splash for exactly the reason you said, because of the kind of the iconography of it. And you know, Americans, we love our brands, right? Crazy. Yeah. So anyways, beer moves, man. Sunny side up? What? Back on?
Sunny side up is back on. Yes.
Period.
Period. No, sunny side up's on. Last week they canned Peach Around, double IPA, double peach IPA, and Hop Tart, a dry hop sour with grapes added to it. So, yeah, they canned a little bit, put the sunny side back on. Life is good. I had some sunny side last night.
That stuff, man. There's very few things out there that compete with that. I'm telling you, that is so good.
Yeah, it's one of the best beers around.
Yeah,
period.
It really is. It really
end
is.
Of story.
Yeah, end of story. Period. Right. Miracle on Ice. I think we're gonna have to do that from now on, Sean. We get to the end of this. You're like, yeah, blah, 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 blah. Miracle on Ice. Done.
Mic drop.
Mic drop, exactly. Miracle on Ice.
I still can't believe he, like, he had to have put that statement in. Like, all right, this is going to be, it doesn't have my sign of approval till yes, America.
Yeah, America, America. Commies defeated. Yeah, Wolverines.
Red Dawn.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Oh, man. Well, here out in Perkasie, we've got Free Will is ramping up its can production, and I was talking to somebody who kind of somebody over Free Will, and it was basically saying, like, yeah, they're really shifting over a lot of, they're going to ramping up the can production. We're going to see more of it. You know, they've had these can releases that I've, you know, been picking stuff up on, but now they've, you know, I was just there, what, yesterday, 2 days ago, and they've got their coffee oatmeal brown, kind of oatmeal browning cans now. They've got, they even started putting their techno in cans, which I didn't even know about. The Techno IPA was actually, I can remember early on, was one of the first.
That was like their first IPA they brewed.
Yeah, and I've always loved that. I've always loved the Techno IPA. So they've got a bunch more of their stuff in cans, and they just released. I wasn't there for the can release, but I did pick up a 4-pack of their Crisper. Right, their Crisper. It's like a Kolsch style ale, and the way I described it, I was kind of like, I had one the other night. I described it on Untappd. I said it's kind of like, it's a Kolsch. It's definitely a Kolsch, but it has that tinge of the Märzen, right? You know, that you'd get for the kind of traditional Oktoberfest beer. So it's got a little bit more of the maltiness to it than you get into the crisp Kolsch, but it's really good. And it just, you know, it's kind of really light. And, you know, I think it's like 4 or 5% alcohol on it, so it's not, you know, it's not a real heavy beer. It's a really
it's
good.
It's actually drink. A hard style of brew, I believe, too.
Yeah, it is. It is. And if you had, you know, I think, you know, back, you know, go back to the German reference again. It's like, I'll never forget sitting down the Weinstrasse, right? There's this, like, part in Germany, the Weinstrasse is like the wine street, but all the vineyards and kind of run along. Oh, the river was fritten room, not the Rhine, but it's kind of in the central Germany. But so you have this whole area that produces wine, but that, you know, used to ride my bike up through there and used to stop at these little towns and sit outside in the summertime. You have a Kolsch and it was just like, they're so crisp and clean and just so nice. This one is, great. And I've never had one in the U.S. that has tasted as good as you want to have had it in Germany, like, especially when it's fresh. And even this one, I'm going to be wrong about this one. People know a hell of a lot more about beer than I do. But this one from Free Will is kind of like, that's why I said it had that the kind of Märzen tinge to it, right? Because it was a little bit more of that kind of malty. It was a little bit darker than some other Kolsches that I've seen, but it's really, really good.
Yeah, we have a Pilsner on that's really good. Almost like drinking something you go into a store and get for a dollar.
Yeah.
And just pop it and drink it there. Like, it's a really nice German style Pilsner. And it's a really hard. The Kolsch is. Supposedly Sly Fox has a good Kolsch out right now, too.
Oh, really? I haven't had it.
Yeah. So yeah,
I really like those. I think they're super. And I was also psyched to hear when I was kind of like on Free Will's Facebook page earlier today. Just kind of see if there had been anything else that's coming up, is that somebody was asking if they're going to be brewing Safe Word anytime again soon. I mean, Safe Word is kind of it's got habaneros in it, right?
So, mango habanero IPA. Mango habanero,
yep, exactly. I personally love it. I absolutely love that thing. It is like, you know, it's got a great initial taste and then a burn all the way down that kind of follows up right on it. But it's great. And apparently they're at least as it was said on the page, rumors that they're looking to brew it for the holidays, right? It's going to go up against the other kind of holiday spice ales, but so they're going to kind of, this is going to be what they're going to be releasing for that. So we'll see if that pans out. But I was excited to hear that, at least as they reported on Facebook. So pretty cool. So man, anything else for the good of the order? Sean's just yawning.
Coming at a bad time.
No, I think that was the perfect time. All right, so I think that's going to have to do it with Sean getting ready to take a nap before he's got to go to work. But yeah, so listen, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. It's been a good one, folks. Keep a check us out. Remember, become a member of Raging Chicken Press for a little $5 a month. RagingChickenPress.org. More memberships.
See ya.